All right. So it looks like we're recording. Good morning, everyone. We will begin our meeting of the Advisory Commission on Intergovernmental Relations for Friday, April 9th, 2021. Good to see everyone this morning. Just for those who may be viewing from the public, once again, this is a recorded Zoom meeting. Which will be available and is publicly available. This is a public meeting. So if you are looking to be recognized, if you can use your raised hand function or otherwise wave your hands in front of the camera and to be recognized, we should be able to proceed accordingly. Lo the days, you know, the question will become whether or not we really want to once again meet in person at the LOB once all this ends, because this is actually very efficient, but we'll have to decide that, I think, at some point down the road. From what I gather, they're considering having limited opening of the LOB sometime maybe towards the end of the month, but I don't know if our meetings will qualify for that exemption. So in the meantime, we'll continue on as we have. Let's see. We have our agenda that was sent out. I know that Bruce had a little trouble, or it seemed like there was a little trouble getting the agenda out to folks. So hopefully everybody got a hold of it. I know it was recent. Bruce resent it out yesterday afternoon, just to make sure that everybody did get it. I know I was one that had not. So, so let's move on to item 3, which is approval of our draft minutes from our March 5th meeting. Do I have a motion?
So move
from Senator Cassano. Good to see you, Senator, as always.
Second, Lyle.
Second from Lyle Ray. Any discussion on those minutes? If not, I'll try your minds. All those in favor of the minutes as drafted, please indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed or abstentions?
Abstention.
Brian Greenleaf will abstain. Okay, thank you. So that is approved. So moving on to item 4, we do have to discuss as part of our agenda today the ACIR annual report and our 2021 work plan. And I'll once again on these subjects, I always wind up deferring to Bruce, who is our intrepid gatekeeper for all things administrative with ACIR, for which we're eternally grateful. But Bruce, if you could walk us through that again.
Sure. First of all, right up front, I'll say that this is a required report of the ACIR, but without a deadline. Unlike other ACIR recurring reports, this one doesn't have a specific deadline, so you're under no obligation to approve it today. I actually had it on a few agendas in the fall heading into winter. What happened, if you recall, we had the lengthy meeting with the CAPS blueprint discussion in February, and I thought it would be a good idea to remove this from the agenda to make time for the other discussion, and then I forgot to put this back on last month's agenda, so here it is again. And basically, it's just a recap of what's in other reports. It's a recap of what else the ACIR had done during 2020. And it includes a fairly generic work plan for 2021. There had been some discussion of making a much more specific work plan, which I think would be a great idea next year when I think some of the details are figured out as to the kinds of things the group wants to do. So once again, you're under no obligation to approve it today. I regret that my initial email only went to state employees and one other person, John Filchak, received the original email. I don't know why he alone got it outside of the state system. But anyway, I leave it up to the group as to how you want to proceed. Don't feel any pressure to approve it today. And if you'd like to take a look at it and suggest changes, feel free.
Yeah, thanks, Bruce. What's the inclination of the group? I will be very forthcoming and admit that I had not really had a chance to go through it myself in a lot of detail. And personally, you know, I might like a little bit more time to kind of review and consider the draft that Bruce has put together. But I don't know how everyone else feels about it. Like, and maybe for next month's meeting, have it as an agenda item for approval. What's the will of the rest of the group?
I'd support next month. Lyle, yeah.
Yeah, Lyle's indicating next month.
One vote. So I'll make a motion to table it to the next month.
Second.
Second from Senator Cassano. Any other discussion on that? If not, I'll try your minds. All those in favor of tabling this for next month?
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? Okay, thank you. And thanks, Bruce, for doing this, because I realize this is, you know, this is not the sexiest stuff that we do at ACIR. I don't know if ACIR could generally be classified as sexy anyway, but I think it is. But anyway, I appreciate all the work that you're putting into this. And it's because of that I want to make sure that we're getting enough time to really review it thoroughly and be able to comment on it. So moving on to item 5 on the agenda, the LGF initiative, I need to say right at the outset that I think we all would express our appreciation to Senator Cassano and his co-chair, Representative McCarthy Vahey, for their work in passing the governor's bill, HB 6448, which includes in sections 9 and 10 our proposal with regard to what we wound up referring to as the RPIP 2.0 in the testimony, which is the reimagining of how we can do the RPIP grant and make it available to COGS and RESCs throughout the state to initiate voluntary programs housed at the COG or the state or in the RESCs for projects that the groups, that their respective constituent groups, towns or boards of ed deem that, you know, that it can be done a little bit more efficiently if it's done through those regional entities. So thank you, Senator, for your leadership on that in terms of getting that out of the committee, because the bill itself incorporates a lot of the governor's other recommendations on this front. I think it bodes well for passage of that. That was our strategy all along, to try to to see if the governor would be willing to include our recommendations in his recommendations. So all looks well with that. So thank you, Senator, for
a brief comment. It's interesting to see the change in attitudes in various committee meetings now. Somebody that sometimes I don't even know who it is, coming out of the House as an example. Well, maybe we ought to be doing that through the COGS. Those kinds of things are now being suggested by members throughout both the House and the Senate. We never had that a year ago. So, you know, we're making small steps, but really progressive steps as we start to think regionally. So if we could ever, you know, we've talked many times about trying to get some of that federal payment to the COGS that goes to the counties. If that takes place, and I know that I've talked with, you know, our leaders in Congress about getting us on that list, that's going to make a substantial difference, because people are going to see that it's effective. And so it's a good start.
Chair, if I could just...
Yes, right. Wow.
No, Senator Cassano's comments. I'm not sure everybody realizes this, but the county, quote-unquote, payment in Connecticut was $691 million, which gives you a sense of what counties are getting in other parts of the country. And just the Krog share would be $182 million. So that's the kind of scale at which counties are operating elsewhere. So we need to sort of figure that out over the long haul. We were talking about towns voluntarily giving us 1% or 2% of that, and I think we got beat back on that. But it's just a sense of the kind of resources that sort of regional county efforts get in the rest of the country. So $691 million would go a long way. So that's my comment.
Right. Agreed.
Yes, we have here. A hyphenated name, such as Krog / County.
Yep. Yep.
Maybe we should be doing that.
Yeah, and Senator, I think you're hitting precisely the long-term goal of this reimagining of the RPIP grant, because if we can stand up our COGS and RESCs to be performing these kinds of services on behalf of their constituents, their constituent members, certain things we can start out with on an initial basis, but then eventually, I think it hopefully organically will start to expand into all the other potential things that a COG or a REST can actually do that we've not enabled them to take advantage of, in my opinion. So this is, you're right, this is a first step, I think, of many to really reimagine what COGs and RESCs can do for our state. Martin.
Good morning. I want to just publicly thank our chair, Brandon, and other COG members actually as well that provided testimony that day on this section of the governor's bill. Brandon actually made my job 100% easier. I was supposed to go before him, but that first hour wind up being up. So he got all the questions on the whole section of the bill that I was going to have to testify on and answer questions on. So it made it quite easy for me. So I do want to thank you, Brandon. You did a wonderful job of that. And I know we texted back and forth a little bit too, during that there, and thank the others that did, provide testimony for that. So we are looking forward. I do want to note, just so people are aware, that Finance did raise a bill about revitalization, 6655, which talks very similar about how we're revising the RPIP formula, almost that same type of procedure and everything else. We're working on just submitting some testimony in saying that, hey, this is already out there, it's already in process and everything else, so it doesn't need to be, done again. I believe it's Representative Sean Scanlon's bill on it, where they talk about that. It's also got the municipal spending cap piece of that, of the 2.5% as part of that. So just so you're aware of that, we are looking at submitting something, making them aware of the governor's bill, and it's basically the same, options that they're looking at there. So,
and that's that bill number 66. Did I get that right? 66?
55.
Got it. Great. Thank you. And now that I live in Guilford, Representative Scanlon is my state rep. So he'll get a constituent call for sure.
He's a good one.
right. So the other, oh, I'm sorry, Sam, did you want to add? You're muted.
Still muted, Sam.
There you go, Sam. You're muted.
Sorry about that. I just wanted to point out just two things. First of all, the county money, the towns are getting the county money. It's not going to the state this round, but it's all getting divided 169 ways. So you have all that $600 million being divided up. And we're doing the same thing at RiverCog, trying to convince our towns to set aside some of that money to work on some regional projects, and also trying to get our Demis region long-term recovery steering committees for recovery from COVID to try to get their Demis region proposals, subcommittee proposals to towns. So when the checks come and we get the guidance from the Treasury Department that there'll be some chance of funding some regional approaches to long-term recovery to COVID. And then the final thing I'll just wanted to raise is that it does seem like the county equivalency is moving through the process. I know OPM is working with Census Bureau on that. Martin is leading that effort, and And so it seems like that's moving forward. I don't know if there's been any updates anything more to say on that, Martin, than I just said, but I hope that, you know, has Census given us any ETA as to when they might make a decision based on the comments they received or anything?
Not at this point yet. We've, you know, got some clarification back to them on some responses and everything this past week. So they're still going through that with response period right now.
Okay. Great. That's still going on. And hopefully that will get finalized sometime in the next year or so.
Hello.
Lyle, you're not muted, Lyle. So let's see. Okay. The other thing I just wanted to
I don't think so. I have other
make everyone aware of, and I asked Bruce, it's sort of the last minute before today's meeting. Is that seed that I planted about a month or so ago finally took root in a conversation I had with Tom Condon at the Connecticut Mirror. A story just came out on Wednesday in the Mirror, specifically talking about our LGF initiative and the RPIF 2.0, which was very helpful. And this is right in Tom's wheelhouse in terms of stuff. And since he and I go back a long way on these issues, I thought he was the right person to call about this. He also interviewed Sam with regard to the county equivalency. So the story in the Mirror really highlighted there were three different regionalism, if you will, subjects that are all moving forward. I'm getting the notice that I've got some other people who need to come in to the room, and I'm not. Oh, here we go. I'm sorry. Sorry for the disruption. So that story, I think, is really also hopefully shown another light on our efforts at ACIR. Of course, we were endorsing Sam's efforts and Martin's efforts on the county equivalency issue, but as well as the RPIP 2.0. So Tom did us a solid, I think, by drawing attention to that and getting it into the Connecticut Mirror. So tell your friends and neighbors that this is actually happening. So it's all good news. The second item under the LGF initiative, I think, on our agenda is a little bit of a discussion on where we are with regard to the CAPS blueprint. And just to summarize for folks where we stood with that, at our meeting last month, we had had a lot of good discussion about the role that ACIR should be playing in terms of making recommendations specifically to the governor regarding how to allocate federal funds coming in, about the issues related to the delay in ECS escalation that had been already previously approved but was being suspended under the governor's budget. And then maybe, you know, because we had spent a couple of months talking about the CAPS blueprint initiative, should we be fully endorsing that? Should we be endorsing portions of it or otherwise making our opinions known about any of those above mentioned topics? We kicked it to our subcommittee that had a meeting in late March, March 22nd, I believe, and 23rd. And I think it was decided at that in the subcommittee that I think there was a consensus within the subcommittee that given the understanding that some of our ACIR members are state employees, they cannot be in a position of offering opinions one way or the other about the governor's budgets or other things like that. So that with that proviso and their need to abstain from any comments one way or the other, I think there was a consensus, and correct me for those who attended, that we should at least communicate to the legislature, who is now responsible for the budget, our feeling that the suspension of the gradual ECS increases should not occur, that they should be maintained, and that the federal money under ESSER be allocated, you know, as we see fit to try to resolve a lot of the other issues that we're facing. I don't know if there's anyone else from the subcommittee meeting who might want to add any color to that. I think that kind of described it, but we had agreed that we put it to the full board again, to the full commission again, for its consideration as to whether we want to take a position either on the CAPS blueprint or on the ECS suspension of those increased funds. Is there anyone else who wanted to maybe offer some thoughts about what happened at the subcommittee level? I'm not seeing anyone. So I guess if no one is really expressing any opinions, I think perhaps the appropriate thing to do at this meeting is to endorse a recommendation to the General Assembly around not necessarily endorsing the entire CAPS proposal, but having the CAPS blueprint under consideration and recognizing it and pointing it out as a touchstone that the legislature should be looking at for guidance on how to proceed. And so that's one thing. And then the second thing is, do we want to make a statement about the discontinuation of the annual scheduled increases in ECS? So there's a kind of a two-part motion there that we might want to consider. Jim?
Brendan, if you remember, my comment on that was that I would prefer to stay away from the word endorse. It just seems to me that that carries some connotations with it that I'm not comfortable with at this point, because that includes the whole package. I think it's a terrific concept going forward, but there may be parts of it that are in need of more study and getting more fact finding and more development. So to endorse it, I don't know. I'm uncomfortable with that word.
Yeah, okay? Agreed. Yeah, I would suggest that if with Jim's points in mind, you know, that it may be, you know, acknowledging it as a touchstone, as a source of guidance, perhaps, that the legislature may want to take under advisement. You know, John?
Thank you. I know that there's other plans out there, the state local center also put out a plan that was actually more aggressive in funding education. And I don't think that's received attention. It basically would say just use the ECS formula, fund it. And clearly there are some that believe that there's enough federal money to do that. Others don't. I'm supposed to be representing a council of small towns, and some of the small towns, will be harmed, if the governor's proposal does not go through, because we are paused and we were scheduled to lose money. We've created our budget based on, as we always do, the governor's recommendation. So if the pause goes forward, I would lose money. And some people will say our town will lose money, and many other small towns will lose money. And I will say, some will say, well, sure, you were overpaid. No, the state has underfunded the program for decades. And 10 years ago, we were short funded millions of dollars. And now I would lose $165,000 or so after my budget's already going to town meeting. It's a little late for this, is part of my issue. So I don't think that we can make these huge issues in a month. So I certainly think that both the CAPS plan, but also I think the other plans that are out there should be thoroughly reviewed and developed. But I don't know whether it's in time for this year's budget or as part of the second year of a biennium, but I'm just concerned that we're going to rush without looking at the whole picture. And I don't usually say that. I'm usually more, let's go for it. But I'm concerned that there's a lot of hidden issues here just because it's so complicated, not because people have agendas.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks, John. Yeah. Others? How do folks feel otherwise?
Well, Brandon, I'll go just from, you know, just as a kind of rehash of my comments the last time, you know, like OPM is not going to come out and endorse a plan for ECS funding, obviously, because of governor's budget and everything else for that there. So something I don't think, you know, that obviously, you know, I cannot vote on, you know, here at ACIR level because of, you know, our relationship, you know, governor's office, OPM, you know, that's a budget that we've put forward on it. I think conceptually, you know, to have it looked at as bringing it as more information, you know, to the parties and everything else may be a better approach to do so rather than saying that we do this as a recommendation or that should be done that way would be, you know, my sense would be a better approach on this.
Okay. Yeah. Thanks, Martin. Anyone else on this? It sounds like what we're reaching as a consensus is that, yeah, that on the two topics that I'm raising here, one, the question of whether we should take a position on the pause, I think that's the term that John used, which I think is the better term. You know, the pause of ECS funding increases is not something that we should, as a body, be taking a position on at this point, given a lot of the things that have already been mentioned, the need for more information, a lot of different varying viewpoints on that, that still need to be flushed out. Is that a fair summary of that? As far as the taking a position on the pause on ECS increases? And I'll assume silence is a sign of agreement on that. Okay, and then with regard to the CAPS blueprint, do we want to, you know, I think it's relatively benign for us to be saying, look, you know, a lot of good thought has been put into this, and we would recommend that the legislature take a look at this, not to say that this is exclusive of any other analyses that have been done or are out there right now, but that we've done some due diligence on this, and we think it's at least helpful to inform decision making going forward on education funding. Is that a fair statement to make that's not necessarily endorsing the proposal? Do folks feel comfortable with that? Yeah, Jim. If you can unmute, Jim.
There we go. Thank you. I think so, but I don't want to lose sight of the fact that I think this is a terrific beginning of kind of the a basis for a plan going forward, and so I wouldn't want to see it, you know, just kind of frittered away either. Yeah, it's kind of keeping it on the tightrope to make sure that it's studied and properly developed, I think.
Yeah. Okay. So I guess what I propose is that, Lyle, did you have a?
No, sir. No, I'm good.
Okay. I guess the what I'd recommend then is that based upon a motion to be made and approved by the board, that we'd send a letter to the appropriations chairs, to the appropriate legislative leaders, to consider the CAPS proposal as one of many, or as an important source for guidance on how we might proceed. Is that a fair way to phrase that? Okay, could I get a motion for that? From John, motion made. Do I have a second? From John Filczek. Any other discussion on that? Okay, if not, I'll try your minds. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Okay. Aye.
Any opposed? Or abstentions? Okay, good. All right, so we spent a lot of time on that, and I think it was time well spent, and I think it helped inform us a lot about kind of how we're thinking about education funding going forward. So I think that's a fair resolution as to how we want to proceed on that. John.
If in the letter we can emphasize that which we all know, that the educational funding system is critical to all elements of the state's future, our future workforce, our ongoing property tax load or burden, because even the current system, which was a compromised system, was done in a time of slightly different budget burden for the state. So I think we need to look forward to say that was what needed to happen then. We need to have a better system going forward. And it's for the future of the state. You know, the cities and towns are getting overwhelmed by property taxes. Now people want to cap it without giving any more resource. And most importantly, are we developing the workforce for the future of the state of Connecticut? And we need the resources and skills and abilities to do that. And so I don't think it should all just be about money for education. I think it has to be about the future of the state.
I'm taking notes as you're speaking. John, did I hear you volunteering to draft this letter? I don't know. Did I?
I could give you a draft, but somebody else will need some severe editing. Because I will put personal opinion in there.
Well, I tell you what. We'll put together a draft and then, but we'll send it off to you to make sure that we're covering a lot of the points that you're making, if that's okay.
That's fine.
Okay. Okay. So the other element that we talked about, a discussion that we had at our subcommittee meeting consideration by the full board was the fact that it was pointed out that there is a lot of reference and perhaps misappropriation of a particular term in the debate right now, and the term being home rule. There was some discussion at the subcommittee level about the fact that folks in the context of the Desegregate Connecticut effort in the zoning change regulations that are being passed out of committee at this point in the legislature, that there is a reliance on this term of home rule, which I think it was John who really made the point that it's been misapplied in many cases and perhaps needs to be defined anew based upon what the truth is as far as what the term really means. I don't know, John, if you want to elaborate on that. I'm putting you on the spot, but.
That's okay. Thank you. And I had a, before this meeting, a hour plus meeting of my board with legislators discussing or debating this same topic of what is home rule? What does it mean? What doesn't it mean? And I, you know, focused on this discussion of the bills related to housing, Senate Bill 1024 being the focal point of that. And this, you know, and I even heard in this meeting from legislators and from some of my members, this belief that the zoning statute is not so much a statute as it is a right of each town to it's totally their discretion in terms of zoning. It's not enabling. So I think clarification or some further study of what is home rule, which without getting into all the guts of that, we talked a little bit about Dillon's rule and just some of taking that 1987 study that the ACIR did and bringing it up to 2021. To kind of try to get clarification and a better understanding of you have charter towns, you have statutory towns. I mean, further clarification and discussion of where one power ends and the other begins, because I think it's been flipped on its head in this discussion on housing and zoning in the state right now. And it's become almost a political rallying point of the state versus the towns and the towns versus the state. And I don't think it's a healthy discussion at the moment. I think it's really been I can say this on Zoom, it's really been bastardized the whole term. So, and I think we could add some positive elements to this.
Mr. Chair, if I could just add to that.
Yeah,
wow. I've sort of dealt with this before in other contexts, but Connecticut is a Dillon rule state, and this is a federal provision. And Dillon rule states basically say that localities can do whatever the state tells them to, and you must have state authorization to do it. That's what a Dillon rule state is. Now, half the country isn't. Many southern and western states are the flip side, which is you can do anything not specifically prohibited by state law. And that's the watershed. And we are specifically in the very strong state control over localities. So the state can do whatever they want regarding what home rule means or whether you have it. So now there may be traditions and practices, but the point is that as a Dillon rule state, the Supreme Court says in Connecticut, towns do what they're told. That's the bottom line. Now, that may not go over very well, but I think it would be very helpful to go back over the paper that Bruce was kind enough to share on the 1987 review, and just look at the history and the context in many parts of the country. This has been litigated all over the country. It's not a new thing, but I think it would be very important to sort of try and squelch some of the misinformation, as John said, that has caused us some problems here. And the other part I would say is that sometimes, and this is sort of like states' rights, many times these are like red flags to me. They get brought up in bad contexts. I think it's very important to get the air cleared. That's my suggestion.
Yeah. Thank you for that. And that was the substance of our conversation and at the subcommittee. And, in the course of the conversation, a few of the members were remembering and acknowledging that ACIR in particular had done a number of these, reviews, particularly the one that John referred to back in 1987. And Bruce was good enough to go back to the state library to acquire a lot of those earlier studies that ACIR has produced on this topic.
Yep.
And that has been shared with the other members of ACIR And thanks to Bruce for putting that together. So the question I think for the group is, do we as ACIR want to engage in a report essentially that would, or might actually be in light of Lyle's comments, it might actually be what I would, as a lawyer, I would consider to be more or less a legal brief on, you know, what is the statutory basis for home rule? What does it really mean, both at a national and state level, and produce that for public consumption? I don't think we're going to be able to get that done before the end of this session.
No.
You know, I think it requires a little bit more depth than we can do over the course of the next month or so as these bills are being considered. But I do think it's a worthwhile exercise for ACIR to kind of reset that discussion so we have a clearer idea of what we're talking about and perhaps can dissuade those who might misappropriate the term from doing so. How's that for a diplomatic way of putting it? John? You're muted, John.
I could just add, you know, one of the things that's troubled me listening to multiple public hearings, and this discussion of home rule, and I'll put it in quotations, and regionalism or shared services seem to have bled together to a degree, so that there was, I give one example, there was a fairly what I thought was innocuous bill on geographic information systems and setting up a council through OPM. And one of the goals being just to have common standards for how we put the information in so that from town to town, we have it more seamless, which is not the case right now. And there was objection to that by quite a back and forth between a faculty member at UConn and a member of the General Assembly on, well, you know, the discussion went, well, we have a right as a town to set up our own standards and the state should not be telling us to do this. Well, you know, and again, that home rule thing came out there. And are we going to have 169 standards for GIS? Are we going to have, you know, some things just lend themselves to uniformity. Some things don't. And where is the state's role and where's the town and what is that line? And I think that further discussion or further laying it out, it makes a lot of sense for us to explore. We obviously can't do it in the next month and a half, but over the next many months, I think it makes a lot of sense.
Mr. Chair, if I could just add to that.
Sure.
I think this is classic what an advisory commission on intergovernmental relations is about. You know, it's about the state-local relationship. So it's not like we're wandering far afield into, you know, aquatic invasive species. This is our core effort. And the other thing in terms of not rushing to get it done wrong, this is going to be an issue, I think, over the coming years. So this isn't going to go away. So I suggest we do take the time and do it right. The 1987 study is a very good start. And the other part of this is, you know, the Dillon Rule is 110 years old, so this stuff is not evolving all that fast at the constitutional level. So I guess my 2 cents worth would be to encourage us to do this, take the time to do it right, and I think it's directly in our bailiwick. So that's my 2 cents.
Yeah, agreed. John?
Just remember, New Jersey decided that there were towns that were too small, and they just eliminated them.
And right. They have the right to do that.
They have the right, and Connecticut does too.
Yes.
We are chartered by the state.
Right. Jim.
Yes, just a comment. If you look at that report that Bruce was good enough to send out, Dave Russell was one of the editors, and there's also a note there at the bottom of the introductory page that lists someone by Miss Foote, who also did a lot of work on that. And they were the ones who were back in those days. You know, when you look at that report, there's a lot of detail and a lot of research, a lot of fact finding that went into that. And it's a very, I guess I would say, easy to read report. So I guess my point is that it took a lot of work that went into making that report.
Yep.
And in the last 10 or 15 years, in my view, we haven't had the support. You know, Dave and Ms. Foote were working at OPM. We haven't had the ability to, you know, because of budget constraints, I suppose, really to have the support that we need in order to really produce worthwhile information. So I just point that out and hope that somewhere down the road there's a solution for that.
Mr. Chair, if I could add one more comment.
Sure.
You made the point about this being a legal brief. This is really sort of classic constitutional law professor world. It's not a sort of layperson work. So that's something to think about in terms of our, you know, constitutional lawyer capacity in the state. But that would be who I would make the outreach to the first draft. Anyway, 2 cents worth. But it is classic American constitutional law, I mean, in terms of what we do. So it's not it's not a matter of us making up our views as to what we want. It's really about a reflection on what the constitutional law and any new evolution is, I think.
Yeah, agreed. And I'm chuckling only because I don't know how many lawyers we have among us in this meeting. I know I'm one of them, and I think Lyle may have just volunteered me to.
Yes.
Which is fine because this, I love this stuff. So, I'm happy to participate.
Right.
Is it, Mr. Chair, would it be possible if we could reach out to either UConn or Yale to their respective law schools and see if there's, as the same way we've solicited students through the UConn public policy folks to see if there is some assistance we could enlist?
Yeah, I was going to suggest that. I think, I would want to ensure that we're steering, not that we're not supportive generally of the discussion, but I would want to steer a little bit clear of those entities at Yale and UConn law in particular, who are already working on the DSEG Connecticut stuff.
Sure.
Because I don't want this to seem like this is kind of a partisan. Well, partisan is not the right word, but a directed outcome,
right.
But rather more of an independent, objective legal analysis of
right.
what we're really talking about.
Yep.
So I think it would have to be something fresh, if you will.
Yeah. Mr. Chair, again, my suggestion would be, you know, if we proceed with this, it would be a small working group from ACIR and then seek what I would sort of call straight constitutional lawyers, people who are not involved in litigation or other things related to it. I mean, there are people like this. I met a constitutional lawyer from the University of Paris who wrote the South African Constitution. There are people that just do constitutional law that don't have other access to grind. So I just don't know, as John was suggesting, who's at UConn or who's at Yale that could help us. But I think we need to have terms of reference, and I would say no more than 5 or 6 people in a working group working with them on key questions and things of that nature. Not so much a directed outcome, but a context in terms of how they might proceed.
Yeah, agreed. So I don't, do we want a vote on this to proceed on this, or do we want to just acknowledge that this is a consensus of the group and we'd like to go forward? What's your, my sense of it is that we can go ahead and do this with the board's general acceptance, and the final report we can either accept or reject, I guess, but
right.
But we can proceed without a vote. Is that fair?
Makes sense.
Works for me.
Okay.
I think it'd be good to help frame the context of everything, because there's some good aspects to small governing units and a lot of innovation from that. So it'd be great to have some basis of fact that everyone can agree on in their debates rolling forward. So
well, just one other tidbit. I mean, the rest of the world actually takes this stuff seriously. John mentioned New Jersey, but in Canada, every major metropolitan region was restructured by their provincial governments in the last 20 years, and they just abolished towns and cities all over the place. So the laws are not that different. There's a different practice. Maybe that's another, as you know, in law, that's not the, it's not just the law, it's the practice. We have a different practice, but I think I'd be comfortable going ahead as you recommend. And I think if we have a consensus, that'd be great.
Yeah. Yeah. John, did you want to add something?
I think it would be beneficial. And I think building off what Lon was just suggesting, that that we do formalize it, and perhaps a small group can lay out a scope of study for the parameters, so that this group is comfortable with where what we may be asking to be done. And in terms of maybe folks from the outside saying, well, it's just trying to endorse a particular policy that is making its way through the General Assembly, that would be beneficial. Because to me, you know, when we're looking at the track of this local government of the future, this is a, I think, a critical question to update and to have answers to, because if these initiatives are going to be viewed by a large swath of the state as a threat, that's going to hurt our progress. And so I think it's important that we're fairly specific on what we're trying to accomplish.
Could I just add one thing? And this is maybe not necessary to say with everyone here, but things like this are automatically political, even if you don't want them to be. In other words, people who are on one side or the other of this are going to consider this a political effort. So I think there's just fasten your seatbelts. It's likely to be controversial and people will have opinions. So it's not that everyone's going to be happy. I think we need to fasten our seatbelt for that. So.
Yeah, agreed. Jim and then Ron.
Yeah, you know, this was controversial back in 1987 when ACR was looking at it.
Yep.
And this report was widely distributed to the legislature and OPM, et cetera, to the towns. And so, you know, it might be sort of a neutral beginning point to resurface the report as a starting point for the beginning of a study going forward to sort of pick up where this left off. I mean, the attempt in 1987 surely was a nonpartisan attempt to just get the facts out on the table. Mm-hmm. And report reads that way, I think. Just a thought.
Yeah. Yeah, agreed. Ron, and then Francis.
I want to say that even after the ACIR study, under the gold dome
Ron, you're breaking up. I can't hear you.
Okay. Can you hear me now?
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a book called Under the Gold Dome that gets into, it was written by Judge Satter, that very good.
Yeah. There we go.
And I didn't even have to mention that it was published by CCM at some point. But but that has some home rule information that could be useful. But I was wondering if this is considered somewhat controversial, should we get an understanding of what the scope is going to be prior to a vote on it?
Yeah. So as people have been offering their thoughts on it here, I've been kind of ruminating myself about that question, Ron, and I'm wondering if we should set this down as a topic for our subcommittee to more fully flush out the scale and scope of what it is we would want to do, and bring that back to the ACIR for next month's meeting. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it sounds good to me.
Yeah, okay. Sure.
All right. Because as we are talking, I think we are acknowledging that there's going to be some controversy with it, as Lyle says. I think we want to be clear what the point of this is, and that may require a more direct vote of this entity, but at least for now, if we can send it to the subcommittee to flush it out a little bit and bring it back to the full body after that. Francis?
Yes, thank you, Brendan. I was going to about to make the point that you just made, so I would just second what you said. I would agree sending it to the subcommittee.
Yeah, okay. Good. You know, the subcommittee was originally Bruce's idea, by the way, so establishing kind of a standing subcommittee to take these items under advisement that we can't always do with the full body. So once again, Bruce's wisdom is kind of guiding us forward. So thank you for that. Okay, good. So we will do that at the subcommittee level and come back next month on that. The other item for discussion under the LGF initiative portion of our agenda is a discussion about the Massachusetts Division of Local Services report. And John, this was something that you also brought up at the subcommittee level last month. So did you want to talk about that a little more?
Well, I brought that up because I think I use that that division as a resource for a lot of the work that I do with my COG. And I think it is, and there may be better models, but I think it's a model that we may want to explore. And it probably was more what OPM was, 25 years ago when it had a lot more funding and staffing to assist regions and towns than it currently does. Not a criticism of current, but it's just the reality of the limitations that budgets place. But the direct assistance that they've provided in some of their studies, the model bylaws or regulations that they provide through that group and a couple of other divisions, I think for individual communities and for looking at shared and regional services, we're using one of their studies now as a model for some new services in my region. And it's something we may want to look at for maybe the next, in a future legislative session, to maybe make some suggestions for a more robust, which is in that report we produced a year ago, to have a more robust intergovernmental relations division at OPM to assist communities individually and collectively.
I was muting myself because my dog was barking. John, so what would remind me though too what the thought was as far as its application to what ACIR might be doing?
Well, I think again it's a more robust resource than we currently have, and I think that's something we should examine. It's in line with one of the recommendations from the report that we produced a little over a year ago. It's one of the, I think it's a subset of one of the major six recommendations there. And I think it's something we can look at and have a larger discussion with the group. It would take some resources to put in place, but I think it's my point of view, it's worth it. It's something that several of us have talked about over time. I would just urge people to take a look at their site, some of the programs they have there.
And this also goes to the question of our production of best practices.
Yeah. I mean, they have, for instance, the program I'm looking at now was a shared town administrative study they did, where they looked at, okay, could multiple towns share a town administrator? These are small towns. And they did the report, and then they showed them where they have access to a state grant, similar to RPIP. So you get sort of that feasibility study through the state system. not to preclude, you know, those communities or a region doing their own study, but it's more of a formal process where you've got linkage with study and resources.
Right.
And they have, you know, in-house experts that did that, that work, and produced a nice report that they could bring back to the community and explain and say, okay, is this something you want to try?
Yeah. Okay. So I think what we'll do is we'll leave that on our agenda as a, you know, and take that under our advisement for us to our members to take a look at as a potential resource that will add, well, consider for the future, right? For recommendations in the future. Is that your thought?
Yeah, I mean, I go back and I try to go back to that study that we did a little over a year ago, which has six major program proposals or suggestions with a bunch of subsets and then 30 some odd specific recommendations. And to me, it would be a shame that just a lot of work went into that just would sit on the shelf. Some of that, a little bit of that has gone forward, but most of it is really nothing's happened with it. So I'd like to make sure that we just don't do studies and then forget about it. And then we repurpose something in the future. So,
yeah. Okay. All right, good. Well, so we'll, and maybe that's another topic for the subcommittee also to look a little bit deeper into later this month. So then item six on our agenda, Lyle, Lyle's on deck about this. We have our first webinar on the policy studies. Lyle, maybe you can update everyone on that.
Yep, the first is on the best practices reviews in a number of states. Ryan Miller from the University of Georgia did the paper. We have our chair here as an introducer of the ACIR work here, and then we'll have a reactor panel. So it'll be done in 60 minutes. Please register for the Zoom, and I think we should have a good turnout.
Yeah, can you go back through as well what exactly the agenda will be for that presentation and how that will actually get laid out?
Yeah, it'll be a welcome from Professor El-Khadri and me, and then remarks on ACIR from you, and then we will have a PowerPoint presentation. I think many of you already have it from Ryan Miller, who will walk through that. And then we have a reactor panel of several people on the call today. John Filchak and John Elsesser are two. And Maria Capriola from Simsbury, the town manager, will react, and then we'll have a Q&A session. So that's sort of the format.
And what time is that? I know it's on May 5th, but what's
noon.
The
noon to one?
Got it, right. Okay. Good. And what's the status of the other studies at this point?
A number of them are still in process. The one on information technology is still working. John, I think Elsesser knows where the local government revenue one is in pretty good shape. But we're just sort of rolling these out one at a time. We only have so much bandwidth to do these, but we'll proceed with the rest of them as well. So we have a shared services study that could be next from a UConn student. And then we have another UGA student. And then we have one more UConn student work. So we have a total of four that could be teed up.
Great. Okay, thank you for that.
Yep, please sign up.
I'm sorry?
I was just saying to folks, please sign up to join us.
Yeah, to join, right. And the link to that is on your agenda if you've, if you go back to that, what Bruce sent out this week for this meeting. Okay, so are there any other issues or matters for us to bring up today that... is not otherwise on the agenda? Or any comments? All right. If not, then are there any public comments from folks who are watching who are not necessarily ACIR members? And I'm not seeing any. So with that, we'll just refer to the fact that our subcommittee meeting that we have been, whose agenda we've been loading up today, that will be on Tuesday, the April 22nd at 10:30. So for those who are interested in having these conversations that we've been discussing today, please mark that on your calendars. And then our next full meeting for ACIR will be Friday, May 7th at 10:30 at the usual time. All right. Anything further for us to discuss today?
Motion to adjourn?
If not, I'll yell. Second. Accept that motion and seconded by Martin. Those in favor, aye.
Aye.
And then have a great weekend, everybody. And,
thank you.
Hang in there. Enjoy the nice weather.
Everybody.
Thank you all.
You too. Bye.